Welcome to the MJA podcast. I'm talking to a friend of the pod, Professor Chris Del Mar from Bond University, Professor of Public Health. Hello, Chris. Thank you for your time.
It's my pleasure.
Now, you and your colleagues have written a paper that's caused a little bit of a stir, particularly this week after its release on the MJA website, about how much prescribing general practitioners are doing of antibiotics for acute respiratory infections. Tell us why you needed to do the research. What prompted you to do the research, basically?
Good question, actually. Well, one of the members of our team, David Luke, infectious diseases physician at the PA, said it would be interesting to know what an idealized practice would prescribe if they prescribed according to guidelines. And we thought about that. We thought, actually, that would be an extremely interesting study to do, because we would then be able to compare what an idealized practice would do with what GPs actually are doing. We guessed that an idealized practice would get the prescribing rates down towards something like what happens in Sweden and the Netherlands, which are held up as exemplars of good primary care,
yes,
and particularly low prescribing for acute respiratory infections. So we thought that would be worth doing.
Okay.
It's actually technically difficult to do. It was a desktop exercise. We didn't collect any new primary data. And we formed an alliance with some of the Beach people, mm-hmm, at the University of Sydney, because they had the data from Beach. It's this big study of GP activity, where GPs contribute very detailed information about each consultation they have over, yeah, a fortnight period. And it's really probably the best data we've got on GP activity. We were able to make the adjustments that were so difficult, because guidelines say things like, you don't really need to use antibiotics for sore throat unless the patient's got a history of acute rheumatic fever, or they're indigenous, and yeah, all that kind of stuff. And so we had to estimate the rates of attendance of those subgroups, and so that took a fair bit of hard work to get that done. So what the surprise with the research in the results was that we got a much bigger difference between what GPs are doing and,
yes,
what GPs would do if they adhered rigidly to guidelines by a factor of, 4 to 9 times as much as GPs are doing 9 times more,
yes,
than would if they adhered to guidelines.
And of course, that's the number that's stuck in the head of the media all this week. Have you been happy with the way the study's been covered?
We've been slightly surprised, actually, by the attention it's got. And I'm concerned that this looks like GP bashing,
yes,
which is not our intention at all. I mean, two of us on the team are GPs.
Mm-hmm.
I see patients regularly every week. I understand fully how difficult it is in general practice. And I think some aspects of what we did can be overinterpreted.
Yes.
So, for example, guidelines, it must be remembered that guidelines are literally just guidance.
Yeah.
They're just a recommendation. And they have to be modified for individual patient factors. So, general practice is much more complicated than just following a guideline slavishly like a cookbook,
yes,
and saying, it says do this, I'll do that. And, we could replace GPs with computers, which obviously we can't do yet anyway. So it worries me that this is probably over-optimistic. But having said that, I think that the results show the enormous potential there is to reduce the amount of antibiotic prescribing in primary care.
Mm-hmm.
Acute respiratory infections is just over half what all of antibiotics that GPs prescribe, the indication for them. And general practice is well over half of all antibiotics prescribed to human beings in Australia. So we're talking about a very important slab of the antibiotic prescribing. And that's a big mountain of antibiotics. That must be generating an awful lot of antibiotic resistance.
Well,
and
yes,
antibiotic resistance is the main focus of what we're doing.
Mm. One of the things I think you mentioned in the paper, or I might have heard you say it on one of the media outlets, the therapeutic guidelines that we're talking about are not actually freely available to all GPs, are they?
No, they're not. No, they are a company actually that they were created out of hospital guidelines originally down in Melbourne,
right?
And then they became so popular that people wanted to actually buy them and use them in other settings.
So of course they sold
outside that one hospital, and so they've become. I think they're about the second most popular guidelines in primary care in Australia, second only to the RACGP's Red Book. Although they're not free, they are very well used and respected and evidence-based.
So what role do you think patient pressure plays in all of this? I mean, I know, you know, many's the time I've wandered into my doctor with a chesty cough and sort of hoped that I'd walk out with a prescription for antibiotics. But and increasingly, I'm disappointed, which is good. But
yeah, it is good.
But do you think that's a factor in making GPs just pull out that script pad and go for it?
You know, I think it is a factor. GPs often say, look, I'd love to reduce my antibiotic prescribing, but, you know, it's what my patients want. And it's very hard to refuse them. We know that GPs put a very high value on the patient-doctor relationship, and they don't want to, you know, feel as if they're rationing something.
Mm. I know one of the comments on the MJA Insight story we had was, you know, I'd like one of these experts to come and sit in my surgery on at 5:30 on a Friday afternoon with a mother and three screaming kids, one of whom's, you know, got a chesty cough and a runny nose, and then tell me that I'm not going to give them some antibiotics. But you know,
yeah. Look, I do that. I do that.
I know.
My surgery, and I have screaming kids and mothers saying to me, that brings me to an important point. I think that fixing this isn't easy. I've been working in this area and, you know, running my fingers through the data, the trials and everything. I've done systematic reviews of all the important areas in this, and I've been changing my practice accordingly. And it's taken me probably 20 years to refine my practice to an extent where I think I do achieve the guidelines rate, probably even exceed it, possibly, because I'm able to employ a whole bunch of different techniques that I think we need to make available to GPs. We need to package them up in a way that GPs can access them and practice them without it being a expensive and time-consuming job. Yeah, there are things like delayed prescribing, for example, where you say, look, I don't think you need antibiotics for this. I think it's going to get better all by itself. But I'm a nice person. Here's the prescription if you do need it. My suggestion is don't use it. But if by, you know, Friday things haven't got better, then why don't you start them?
Yeah.
Or if you're getting worse by Wednesday, then start them earlier. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's actually been trialed and shown to be effective in it. More than halves the antibiotic prescribing if you use that technique. And so that's one thing, not difficult to do, but it does need, you need to practice doing it and learn how to, you know, and, you know, get used to saying those words and all the rest of it. So it's actually quite difficult to learn all these. McGinn and his group have shown that in a cohort of GP registrars in Newcastle, that their prescribing isn't all that different to their supervisors.
Ah, there you go. Yes.
Yeah.
Modelling.
So, curses. Yeah, it's modelling. And I think the problem is that GPs want to play safe. And I think that diagnostic uncertainty is probably the biggest problem that GPs have to face in this particular area. Lots of other areas too, by the way.
Yes.
But, you know, every acute respiratory infection, you know, every sore throat and sniffle that presents to a GP can, you know, could be just, you know, good old common sniffle or cough, it's going to resolve spontaneously, nothing to worry about. Even if it's bacterial, it'll get better all by itself. But amongst them is the rare but very dangerous serious illness, like meningococcal meningitis.
Yes.
Like community-acquired pneumonia. And we all know that any one of these illnesses could blow up into something very dangerous. Actually, it takes a bit of nerve to say, I think we'll just keep watching it. And that living with that uncertainty is difficult.
Yeah.
And our job is to make sure that we put enough safeguards in place so that our patients are safe, so that these are things to watch out for type things.
Mm.
But I think we need to explain the uncertainty to our patients,
yes,
which is sometimes difficult for some doctors to do.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I don't know whether this is bacterial or viral. I actually can't tell. And that in a single consultation, we can't sort these things out. And we just have to make a decision on incomplete information,
mm-hmm,
and put in place the safeguards that will make sure that no one comes to grief. There are other techniques we can use. I mean, I think that shared decision-making.
Yes.
That's a thing we've written about in the MJA. I think that's got enormous potential, because what we do know from work we've done here is that patients grossly overestimate the benefits of antibiotics.
Mm.
And if you explain to them how small the benefits are, they're inclined to go, oh, really?
Yeah.
It's not worth bothering with, is it? You know, for acute bronchitis, such as I've got at the moment, that antibiotics make almost no difference. And that for even acute otitis media, I mean, when I started off in general practice in 1980 was when I started, every case of otitis media I'd give antibiotics for. And that was routine. That was quite normal. If you didn't do it, you would be probably considered irresponsible, you know,
mm-hmm,
deviating away from normal practice. And that's changed a lot. We now know that the amount of benefit for antibiotics is very small, you know, in the order of half a day out of a spontaneously remitting illness. And if you explain that to patients and then talk about the harms of antibiotics, not just the diarrhea, rash, thrush, all that kind of stuff, but
mm-hmm,
but in addition to that, the threat of resistance. And we know that resistance lasts in the body, you know, decays. It takes 12 months for the resistance genes to disappear down to background levels in individuals who had a course of antibiotics. And those resistant genes pose a threat if you should then come down with a serious infection like meningitis or pneumonia. That sort of optimistic level of improvement that's available to us,
yes,
I think gives us an absolute rate, an absolute target, gives us an opportunity to set an absolute target.
Yes.
That's not going to be the target itself. But, you know, we could easily do, say as a country, let's get our prescribing down to 50% of what it is at the moment. And we could do that safely. The guidelines are conservative.
Mm-hmm.
They err on the side of safety.
Yep.
And so I think that it's kind of might be a comfort to GPs to know they could reduce their prescribing safely without risking anything to their patients. But, of course, you still need to keep your clinical acumen about you. Thank you very much, Kate.
No worries, Chris. Thanks for giving me a call.
Painless.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
Bye now.